Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I've had one too many cigarettes burning up my lungs. Had to taste of one too many lips hanging off my tongue. Oh, oh, oh. Sunday morning getting high, drinking here alone. Thinking up a brand new alibi for not coming home. Oh, oh.
People who, like the founder of this show, recognize they're on a dangerous path and make difficult adjustments to be an amazing person, share poems that reveal the duality of our vulnerability and strength, capture the internal battle of the demon and angel on your shoulders, deep poetry, thoughtful commentary, and fun chatter for sinners, saints, and everyone in between. We are part sinner, part saint. And on the in the group, Late Night Poets, on the website, allpoetry.com, you don't have to be in the group to participate, but it's more fun if you are, because you can follow along in the chat, read along with us, and comment. So I hope that you'll look into Late Night Poets on All Poetry, and we're here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm Afasiana, and hopefully soon with me I'll have my co-host, Babbler. She's stuck in traffic, or was the last time I heard. So she's coming, but she's going to be a little bit late. So you're just with me for a little bit. But I'll talk about what the show is going to be tonight. We do have one carryover from Babbler's contest last week, and that contest was coping. So it was about how we each have our own struggles and how we cope with that. So people wrote about their struggle or their coping mechanism and how they make it through, which was a really touching set of poems, and we do have one remaining from that. And since it was Babbler's contest, I'm actually going to hold out for that one so she gets to hear it. And then my contest for this week was Dandelion, and it was based on a conversation that I saw on Facebook that I'm pretty sure was actually fake, but I really liked how it was. It's meant to be funny, but to me it also has some depth to it as well. So it's silly, but also thought-provoking, I think. So the first person says, "Dandelions symbolize everything I want to be in life." The second person says, "Fluffy and dead with a gust of wind." And the first person says, "Unapologetic, hard to kill, feral, filled with sunlight, bright, beautiful in a way that the conventional and controlling hate, but cannot fully destroy, stubborn, happy, bastardous, friends with bees, highly disapproving of lawns, full of wishes that will be carried far after I die." So I saw this and I liked it. So in my contest I say, "Consider the above conversation about dandelions. Write a poem based on what this makes you feel, or use a plant metaphor to express the harsh truth about yourself. I prefer something between 10 and 40 lines, but I am flexible about that." And so that was the contest, and I'm excited to go through these poems with you, and we'll read them together and comment on them. Hi to Robbie and Aphasia. Robbie and Naomi, I'm reading the list, who are on the board. I'm already off to a good start talking to myself. Now, we're going to get started with my contest, and we will come back to Babbler's carryover when she gets here. So the first entry is by Jared A. Harris. And I will give that a read. "Azaleas in June" by Jared A. Harris. "Gentle inside of occasion where we find care tickling petals. Incidental bride, love held persuasion shared in we kind stares prickling meadows. Spoke about the color which aligns sultry as the taste of promise. Hope without lovers, enriched vine, multi grasp, replace buds in honest. Seek tomorrow, as roots reveal truth of our weathered scorn. Beneath followed grass, proof spills as seduced mud, flower fettered in thorns. Sunshine, heal yesterday, bitter reach within floral growth is us. Time peel away, pictures, complete vision, moral host been enough. Stems and pistils leak the life, often held in question, that breathe passion. Limbs hand brittle leaf advice, caution prevails when suggestion lacks seeds satisfaction. The summer pelts, the nature with inkling yellow strips of joy, hunger felt as acres kiss. Twinkling petals, Cupid love toyed. Ribbon across skies, preserving couple sentiment left in planted azalea. Living loss, my disturbing puddle of intimate depths, bend, slanted, failure." End poem. Well, Jared, I really enjoyed this. I think that you have such amazing use of your language. It has complex sentence structure, which is usually the case with Jared's writing. And it's amazing how the flowers are both beautiful and yet create some really dark images. Living loss, my disturbing puddle of intimate depth, then slanted failure. To be a disturbing puddle is a strong feeling. And there's that achingness of that longing that we hear with the hunger that's felt. And it seems like is being teased by the possibility of something, and it's not following through. He's not getting that love that he's looking for. I think this is really well done. The word choices are really interesting, like spilled as seduced mud flower fettered in thorns. I like the alliteration in spilled and seduced, and then flower fettered is really nice. But a flower fettered in thorns, just the use of fettered there, I really, really enjoyed. So thank you, Jared, for sharing this poem with us. I think it's a good way to get started. And now I'm going to read one by Bookworm Dave. And here we go. This is Fly Away, Dandelion by Bookworm Dave, 227. May breezes welcome spring. As the yellow daffodils gave way, their yellow changed to white seeds, to be taken away to four winds, winds to far-off fields to give us back life. Spring returns us to life always, with the flowers and trees, newborn offspring basking in their mother's shadows. Longer days, rising temperature, planting season, bringing back life, springtime in Appalachia. End poem. Well, this creates such a beautiful image of the seeds coming from the flowers and that hopefulness of spring when everything's popping up. I never think of a plant as newborn. I mean, I guess they're not born exactly, but that idea of being a fresh little baby plant, basking in their mother's shadows, that's a fun way of putting it. And there is something really wonderful about the way that plants procreate, and there's that cycle that just keeps everything going, and how those plants can change things from far away to be taken away on the four winds, winds to far off fields. I really like that about how it spreads naturally, but also makes me think about at the library where I work, we have a seed library, and basically people bring in seeds from their garden, and we have them available for other people. So you can take some vegetable seeds or some flower seeds and plant them, and then in the fall when they go to seed, then you take some of those seeds and bring them back to us, and we'll give them to more people. So it's helping spread the vegetables and the fruit and the flowers, and just keep the things going. And so we document where people have planted it and where it's come from. And we actually have partner libraries far away who send us things, but we do make sure it's not invasive species. And it's just amazing how those seeds can make their way and create life in all different places. And so this just makes me think about that. Thank you, Bookworm Dave. For our next one, I'm going to do one of our audio recordings. And, oops, here we go. This is by Colap. And it's called Dandelion Spirit by Colap.
Dandelion Spirit by Colap. The thing about dandelions, funny that most people don't even know the origins of its name from the French dent de lion, tooth of lion, hence dandelion, because of its serrated leaves that are delicious when picked early on in the season to be eaten as a salad with boiled eggs and bacon bits with a vinaigrette to go with it. What better a flower to be personified than that of the dandelion? usefully delectable despite its vernacular appearance, the wild thing, scruffy, uncombed look, as if she'd just crawled out of bed from a lazy, lustful Sunday morning, and say to the world, "Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn," in an alto, throaty Greta Garbo purr. "But I'm short and stout, close to grassroots, my rebel mane combed only by fingers of the wind. My yellow locks will flutter at the least shudder of my master's whim. Tamed by the gusts that'll ply my succulent stem, or even crushed under the shoes of a brute or two, I'll unfurl back proudly to withstand more. Until I'm done, when my short time here on earth is at its end, my frills now turn to seeds, you can drink my blood. Then, the lion wine, may Eos blow me to the 8 cardinal points, or is it 4, so that I may be of use even after I've passed? I was nothing more than the flower of a weed that's almost impossible to eradicate." End of poem.
Beautiful audio collab. I love when we get a SoundCloud from a poet and get to hear it in their own words, and collab does beautiful readings. So I'd like to welcome Robbie to the show. Welcome. I think you're here, Robbie.
I think you hear me now?
You on mute. I hear you now. There you are.
Okay, and now, is it okay?
Yes.
Okay, yeah,
you're
my
here.
My headphone jack was in part way, so.
Well, I'm glad you're here. I don't have to talk to myself anymore. Would you like to comment on collapse?
Yeah, my minutes have rolled over. And, sure. Yeah, I heard most of it. I was just saying, yeah, like my minutes rolled over, and I heard your solo, so I thought I could call in and, yeah, lend a hand. So,
Thank you.
I heard most of this poem, and it's interesting. I've come across, it seems to be the theme that's emerging tonight, kind of the subjective sort of reality sort of thing. And it's interesting to hear dandelions used as that. Like, you know, somebody's like, "Oh, look at that little fluffy dandelion." And then someone else is like, "Ah, there's fields of gross dandelions," and it's interesting to see this in the first poem here, the characterization of the dandelion, the wild thing, scruffy, uncombed look. And I was kind of just thinking as I wrote, I read that, how it's kind of it's like something that could, especially something like that, can be looked at even more subjectively than the whole poem. Like, to someone, wild and unscruffy would be like, it would be almost like a girl looking at a guy like, "Oh, you know, he's dreamy. He's got like all that. He's a bohemian. He's all ruffled up, and, you know, he's a rebel and he's rough looking." And someone, you know, another girl would be like, "Oh, he just looks unkempt." You know, it's the same look, but it just in your own mind, you've kind of put your own lens on it. And I think, yeah, I think that the wild thing, scruffy, uncombed look, that line in particular could be something within the poem that's even more subjective than the poem itself. But with this poem, I got mostly that the dandelion is kind of like a beautiful rebel sort of a thing.
I agree, and I think that's a really good way to put it, the beautiful rebel. And I like that she pointed out the dent de lion, the tooth of the lion, as the origin, because it's like it adds that extra kind of like strength to the dandelion. It gives it that kind of punk attitude. I like what you said, Robbie, about how it's subjective how we interpret that appearance, because it's true. To be a wild, scruffy, uncombed look, I mean, personally, I kind of like that. But, it's, you know, like you said, some people want, you know, perfectly fancy groomed. And that's for all things, including flowers. You know, I'd rather wildflowers than a perfectly symmetrical garden. But everyone has, you know, their own perspective on that. And I think dandelions are one of those flowers where people tend to have a little bit more of a negative feeling for them. They, you know, it's they're expected to be ripped out and replaced with you know, fancier or what's deemed, you know, controlled flowers rather than a weed because it lives wildly. But I'm actually I kind of like them. I like their beautiful rebel nature. And I like that she pointed out, like, that they are edible and there are different, like, many different uses for it. But the way that she talks about it does kind of personify it. My yellow locks will flutter. But the idea of just being that flower is really brought up in this in a good way that I think really works with what I asked for in the contest. And there's that the way that she describes it as like my succulent stem, but crushed by the shoes or a brood or two. So, you know, it's, if we get pushed down by people and our confidence might be destroyed, even though it's actually a beautiful flower that she is. So I thought this was great. It gave us some history, some context. It had that attitude to it, and she put herself in the role of the flower. So thank you, Colap. That was a very, like, well-rounded piece.
I actually have a picture of a dandelion, and the funny thing is that I zoomed in, like, super, super close. I'm an avid photographer, and I have some pretty fancy equipment, and I was able to make it look nicer because it was like an insanely zoomed in macro lens, and the depth of field was like crazy, and it made a fluffiness and kind of a lightness to it. It was almost like a dandelion cloud, and so it just made me think of that because it's the framing of the dandelion. Like it's like you're framing something in a way that if you looked at it kind of zoomed out, it might not look as appealing to you, but it's almost like if when you framed it that way, you kind of forget that it's a dandelion, and it helps you to be a little more objective about it. And
yeah.
So I'm kind of curious if that's going to happen in some of these poems where the perspective is zoomed in or out so that, you know, you won't be as biased towards that. And just before we continue on, I was just laughing when you, like, I have a twin brother. I mentioned that in chat. I have a twin brother, and once or twice in my life, I called him Rob, and like I've kind of done the same thing. Like, wait a minute, that's my name. And one time he called me Thomas. He's like, no, Thomas is my name. Oh, pretty messed up.
Well, I was just reading off the board, and yeah, I read myself, but because it's not my real name, right? So
yeah,
just make the connection. But that's hilarious to do that with a twin. Mm-hmm. I guess you'd probably heard your parents, you know, say it interchangeably at times. So.
Oh yeah, like my dad would always go Tomac or Robert. You know, he'd always, like, start with the first syllable, and then he'd switch it. He's like, no, I'm trying to talk to the other guy. Yeah.
Well, my mom does that, and we are definitely not twins, and, like, it's a brother and sister. And she still, like, names off the names. And she only has two of us. She had seven siblings, and my grandma would just, like, list off the whole list every time because she's like, I don't know which one you are.
You're all in trouble. Go to your room. I know only one of you did something wrong, but you can all go to your room. It's easier that way.
Right?
Yeah.
Really, if she forgets to name you, that's when you're really in trouble. But
hey, yeah. You need to turn on your sibling and like, thanks a lot. Now we all have to go to our room because of you.
Yeah, Yes, and my brother was usually the troublemaker.
Mm-hmm.
I say that like he's not here to defend himself, but no, he really actually he would poke me until I was like it would just be like he would just like gently annoy me all day, and eventually I would snap, and then I'd be the one in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
You know, family things.
Right.
Would you be willing to read the next poem by Stephen T. Wellman?
Sure. So, by Stephen T. Wellman, Fate. I am a dandelion seed, soaring, exploring, furiously floating, free-falling, riding the wind. A weed or flower, a necessary nuisance, an obnoxious growth, a blight, a bliss, seal my fate, be it the wind or a breathing kiss.
Thank you. That was a beautiful read and a beautiful poem. I like that he's not just the dandelion. He's specifically the dandelion seed. And the seed gets to go soaring and exploring. And then, you know, he has alliteration, which I love, frivolously floating, free-falling, all of the F sounds. And then that debate of a weed or flower, I really like that it's called a necessary nuisance. And not just because it's alliteration, although, again, love it, but it's that it's a nuisance in the fact that it may not make your lawn look the way you want it to, but it's necessary because, I mean, it feeds the bees. It you know, that source of pollen, there's bugs who eat it. There's so, like, it creates something that is necessary sometimes. So a necessary nuisance is just a wonderful turn of phrase. And it's that it's the contrasting thing. For some it's a blight, for some it's a bliss. And the idea of the wind will seal his fate because he could be put on someone's lawn who doesn't appreciate it and will just rip him out. Or he could be put somewhere where someone will cherish him. And, you know, sometimes that's true of life. Maybe we're born into a family or a society that appreciates us, and maybe we're not. And so where will the wind take us? I think that's really a beautiful, thoughtful metaphor. Thank you, Stephen. And Robbie, what did you think?
I zeroed in on that part as well, a necessary nuisance. I think that's a wise acknowledgement of how things work in nature sometimes. Well, most of the time, really. Like you have things like dung beetles, and, you know, it's like, oh, they're so gross. But, I mean, without dung beetles, we'd literally be wallowing in shit. There's no other way to say it. It's a gross way to say it, but I say it that way to really drive the point home, right? There's so many things in nature that they're kind of ugh, but I mean, without them, like all the decomposers, you know, they're the grossest probably of the creatures out there in the world, but without all the decomposing creatures that we have to get rid of all the dead stuff and all that and to break it down, you know, we'd be in a very unhealthy and a very gross world. And in this one, as you said, he's not really positing as much one way or the other as in some poems probably will. He's kind of looking at both sides of it, you know, riding the wind, a weed or flower. And then he says, a blight, a bliss. He's kind of playing the devil's advocate with the dandelion here a bit, kind of debating in his own mind, I think, what if it's something on the more beautiful or on the more obnoxious side.
Great comment. And I believe we have Pam with us. Hello, Pam. Mm-hmm.
You do. Hello. Hi, Robbie.
Hello,
hi,
Pam.
Good to hear you both.
Good to hear you. Babbler's running late tonight, so I especially appreciate callers. I mean, I always like to have you call, but definitely tonight, I extra appreciate it. Were you able to hear the poem by Stephen?
I didn't hear it, but, you know, I did get a chance to read it. And I you know, this is one of those poems that's really difficult to separate any part. But I will say, as far as the alliteration goes, I really like frivolously floating and free-falling. I thought that was just wonderful. And I, too, I like that you mentioned, Fabiana, that, you know, he's very specific in that he's not the whole dandelion, but the seed. And Robbie, I like that you mentioned that he plays the devil's advocate. You know, sees it both sides. What I also really liked about this is the end part where it says, "Seal my fate, be it the wind or a breathtaking kiss." You know, I think that's just absolutely a great way to mention that, you know, the dandelion seed goes floating off. It's either because Mother Nature or it's because of, the, you know, the joyful youthfulness of perhaps a child blowing the dandelions or, you know, even just, you know, lovers spending time together. And, you know, just the kind of, it's almost like there's something very playful at the end and the whole idea of that kiss of breath blown on the dandelion fluff and sending the seed off floating. So beautifully done.
Well said, Pam. Can I put you to work and get you to read the poem by Vamped Vixen?
Absolutely. All right. This is With Her Fist in the Air by Vamped Vixen. And it goes like this. Feral wild dandelion with a smirk across her lips, grass staining her pant legs, going dirty barefoot dancing across her pained mother's white living room carpet. Teachers grind it down, pure sunlight from her smile, breaking her kaleidoscope bare to glass rainbow shards. But she slept past their alarm, stubbornly shrugging clipped wings and classroom etiquette lessons, toppling all Miss Manners' books placed upon her crooked head. Gardenia in a beige office, her fingerprints staining reports, missing deadlines cascading like laughing pompous waterfalls, leaving hordes of conventional office-suited zombies groaning. She's not a team player. Flitting past co-workers' gossip, she leaps to lunch breaks. Out beyond parking lot fields, buzzing brightly to the bees as unkept and wild wishes grow from her magic seeds. Her garden blooms even caged by those silver coins. The world will hot iron forge from the workers' bones. Voice loud as a sunflower, behind a sign and rallying roar, she raises a fist so hard to kill. Eye of the hurricane, a life in protest. This purple-haired tornado storm, the rest of the world better prepare to lighten up and steal their hatches. For she takes the shadows and creates diamond sunlight, full of wishes to drift on and on. Like seeds, even if she dies, you have no power here. End poem.
That was a fantastic read. Thank you, Pam. And I love the power in this poem. I like that she uses the word feral as her first word because that just, like, captures that wild spirit. The grass staining her pant legs, going dirty barefoot, dancing around her pained mother's white living room carpet. Yeah, that was me. Although we didn't have a white carpet for long because that was me. I really liked the way that she describes this, like stubbornly shrugging clipped wings. Oh, even when people try to stop you from flying, to kind of make yourself smaller because you're too much in all of your, you know, unique kaleidoscope of experiences and expressions. She still stands up and just keeps trying to fly. I love that. I really liked the use of the gardenias, which would be the kind of flowers that you have in an orderly row. So to say that they're in the beige office with, you know, the I'm mixed up now. She's talking about the office zombies, and they are, you know, the well-kept ones, but she is, while not fitting in as a team player, because her fingerprints are staining the reports and her deadlines are cascading, missing deadlines. I'm just picturing the reports kind of all over the desk. Again, this is sadly me. But I like the way that she brings it to life with those flower metaphors. And the unkept and wild wishes grow from her magic seeds. It's like, yes, she may not be the orderly and organized and, you know, what people expect her to be, but she still is, like, being creative in a way that inspires more with those seeds. So I really like that attitude. And then I also love in the AN when she says, every time they try to bury women these days, the silly bastards don't realize that we're seeds. That idea that more will grow in response to trying to lock us down. So I just thought this was a beautiful, inspiring, empowering poem, and I loved her attitude in it. Robbie, what were your thoughts?
Well, the third stanza is the one that I focused in on the most. There's one in particular towards the end where it says for she takes the shadows and creates diamond sunlight. And there's a long, it was maybe about 5 years ago. And so it's a phrase that just popped into my head. It was something that came to me in my own mind. Like, I don't think it was poetry or anything that inspired it anywhere. But I said to myself, I have to be my own starlight, or I have to be my own light. And just that idea that you have to create your own sort of, even more than positivity, it goes even deeper than that. Like, you have to be your own kind of engine of creation, you know, for your life, like to get things going in that. And like when it said, for she takes the shadows and creates diamond sunlight, I truly did smile when I heard that read, because that really jived with me. That reminded me of that idea that I believe in and I've embraced for myself as well. And then it's, you know, she really capped it off so well. You have no power here. And she led up to that phrase very well, or that last line very well. It didn't get jumped into, or it didn't get, she didn't try to transit into it in a sort of a hokey sort of a way, you know, like kind of a cheesy way of phrasing it. She really drove it home well. And I'm just thinking of the purple-haired tornado storm. Like, I'm thinking what that is. If I'm guessing maybe it's another, like, if it's other types of flowers, or if it's just simply someone with purple hair. I'm kind of curious as to that image there. I'm thinking that it's like a storm of, like, maybe like lavender or something like that, you know, like, or a purple sort of a flower. I hope I'm not completely missing it, that image there, but it's one of those things I have to read over a bit. And I think with this poem, I want to read over it a couple more times to fully absorb it, because the imagery is definitely, there's a lot going on in there, and I think it takes a couple more reads to parse it all out.
No, that's a good point. I kind of wondered about the purple hair too, because it could easily be a flower. But I mean, if, at my most wild moments in my life, I had blue or purple hair. So you never know. Even my not most wild, I've recently had purple hair. But it gives you that sense of, like, I don't know, rebellion, even though I'm too old to be a rebel. So I feel like it could be a real person. It could be a flower. It could be her in her rebelliousness associating with a flower that maybe stands out as different than the rest of the garden. So, yeah, it could be interpreted in different ways. And I can definitely see reading this a few times because there is a lot to it.
These poems are giving me hair envy, even though they're about flowers. There's the other poem that's talking about long flowing locks, and like, now this is talking about purple. And I was like, oh, and here I am sitting with my bald head. I'm like, I'm getting hair envy from flower poems at 1 a.m. in the morning. Life is a very interesting journey sometimes. I think I might have a poem in that. Call it hair envy.
Yes, you should. You should write it. It's National Poetry Month. I've been trying to write a poem every day. Today's poem for you could be hair envy.
Oh, boy.
I understand that, though. I was bald for a little while, I definitely had some hair envy going on. I was fortunate mine grew back fairly quickly, but, yeah, I feel you on the hair envy. Pam, you read it for us very nicely. Would you like to comment as well?
Oh, absolutely. I thought this was wonderful. I love the main message. You know, first of all, amazing imagery and metaphors. And I love the main message of that it's a free spirit who remains true to herself. And I like that it covers, like, her life from her youth, like, you know, mentions the dirty barefoot dancing across her pained mother's white living room, and then the teachers, you know, of school, and then onto the office, onto her grown-up world, where everybody else has become stifled, where, you know, everybody else claims she's not a free spirit. Or not a team player, you know, because people will do that. They'll use phrases like that, not a team player. If you don't 100% agree with what they do and with what they say. I like that throughout she's consistent with her metaphor. I liked listening to you guys have that conversation about the purple hair, which could easily be representation of a flower, perhaps a wild clover, or it could be, you know, just the rebellion of having a hair color that's different. I really particularly like her garden blooms, even caged by those silver coins. The world will hot iron forge from their workers' bones. You know, the world, you know, is full of betrayers. The world is full of, you know, life, parts of life that turn you into somebody that's not free, and she remains so. So beautifully written and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. Thank you. And our next poem is by Daniel Deschino. And here it is. Dandelion Dreams by Daniel Deschino. The wind is the voice of the world and permits what it caresses with loving dominance to speak. Tree limbs crack and creak in defiance to the master wind whim. Shutters bark, siding screams, all a warning to those who dwell within. And trash, discarded by its creator, flies fanciful, free, and foreboding, and its fresh-found freedom. But it's a small dandelion seed, nearly invisible in the sun and turbulence that mocks them all who floats with indifference. quiet beyond the quiet, as a sun ray on snow. It does not crave. It does not boast. Dignified and confident, it simply chooses a home. It cares not for the name weed, of which it is called, ironically named, by virus-like creatures that spread, take over, and control beyond the barriers of nature's checkpoints. And as an instant may pass, and the eons between generations of stars may blink at sentient life, I watch the dandelion majesty. Time stands before me, as pages of a book so easily turned, and the story unfolds. The seed chooses a home, a butchered and painted grassland, cousins of the flower, sunburnt and helpless, humiliated, to satisfy an unwritten rule of forgotten origins, blindly followed by a race long lost from the forest. And it defies those that abhor nature, and it defies the massacring machines, and its synergy with the bees, the wind, the rain, the earth. And a small child sees only a beautiful flower and gently touches with respectful hands and finger smiles. And the soft yellow will caress. And friends will revisit, and friends help friends. So upon a late summer's return, a small child with still innocent, wondrous, and ancient connection that he will seek again so many years from now, elevates a dandelion of seeded hope and releases to the air with breath as a mother's kiss. And the season, the seeds float with dreams of another child. End poem. Oh, I just love this poem so much. Where to even start? So I like the way that it has the wind an emphasis at the beginning, because the wind is key in spreading the dandelions. But I also like how it calls out humans as being the true weeds. I can tell by his poems that Daniel's an environmentalist. He worries about nature and about our impact on it. And I see this here as we are the ones who, in creating these, we actually are destroying natural habitats, and the defiance of this flower is just said so well. I like when he talks about them not giving in to the massacring machines, massacring machines, because dandelions are actually really hard when you're mowing your lawn. They just bend and then they're fine. You can't get rid of them very easily. And I like that. Defying those who abhor nature, who are trying to get rid of it all to make their yarn. Wow. Okay. Go, Faziana. To make their yard perfectly clear. And the synergy with the bees and all the different forces of nature. But my favorite part of this, as people who know that I work with children, is obviously going to be the ending. With that wonder that children have, that connection to just, like, be excited about natural things. And the idea that the child is giving back to the flower after the flower gave it joy. And I say it because I didn't know if it was boy or girl. I hate saying it. Okay, gave back the... I'm going to rephrase that. It gave that... The flower gave the child the joy, and now the child, in blowing away the wish, because that's sometimes what we're taught as children, that if you make a wish and then you blow on it, and those seeds of hope will fly... And that idea that you're doing that so what another child, and maybe many children, will be able to find a dandelion and be excited about it. It's just such a beautiful cycle. The way that he worded it when he talked about the child finding the flower, how it's gently touches, respectful hands. It's not just like tearing the flower apart, which, you know, sometimes you do. Daisies, I tend to do that, you know, he loves me not. but this young child, when it says, and finger smiles, it's like that joy of, like, your senses when you're little, and it's like your finger is smiling as you feel the textures of this flower for the first time. I just think that's such a beautiful thing to include here, that detail, finger smiles. But the ending with the releasing of the seeds, like a mother's kiss, there's just this gentleness to it that is so breathtaking. I mean, the last four stanzas are a poem in itself, but to have the lead up that it does is just wonderful. Okay, I've rambled enough. I really enjoyed this, Daniel. Pam, what were your thoughts?
Oh, I have to agree with you. This is absolutely beautiful. I like that he reminds us of the importance of the wind and the importance of the dandelion, and really, to me, the whole thing speaks of that idea of how important it is to find balance with nature and to respect all aspects of nature. And I, too, really like that he brought the child in at the end because, you know, we should have that childlike love for Mother Nature, that appreciation. And I really like the lines, too, the seed chooses a home, a butchered and painted grassland, cousins of the flowers, sunburned and helpless, humiliated to satisfy an unwritten rule of forgotten origins. I thought those were really the most thought-provoking lines in how we unfortunately see the dandelion. And so just an excellent write and very well done.
I agree, Pam. And Robbie, what did you think?
Well, it's interesting, like what you were talking about in the poem, what you had picked up with the dandelions, like when you're trying to get rid of them, they bend and then they're fine. And it's kind of like when you hear about the philosophy of like being so hard isn't necessarily such a good thing. It can actually make things, it's like you become brittle and you break. And I was just kind of, it just popped into my head because I was watching Bruce Lee yesterday and he was totally about that. And there's all kinds of examples in nature where something is actually a lot more tougher because it's more pliant, it's more flexible and such. And with this, he kind of went into this, scrolling down a bit here because I was just trying to remember where it was that I saw the context of it. That's what I was going for. The subjectivity is more in how different things, like different people and different entities and that see each other. It's kind of like it's like, well, you're just a weed, and it's kind of like they're saying, look who's talking, you're this or that kind of a creature and such, and it's kind of an abstract parallel or comparison, but in the original Matrix movie, Smith was talking to Morpheus, and he was saying, you know what else is like a virus? You know, humanity grows out of control, and he's just like disgusted with humanity. And yet at the I can't remember when it was, if it was at the end of the first, I think it was around the second movie, he starts to turn into a virus himself or act like a virus. And that's kind of the different sort of subjectivity that I got from Daniel's poem is kind of like that. If you wanted to put it in a very schoolyard sort of way, it was like, well, I know you are, I know I am, but what are you? You know, sort of a thing, you know? So I thought that was very interesting.
I like that reference to the Matrix. Well done. Robbie, would you please read the poem by Incubus 2?
Yeah. Got to get to refresh here. That's that soda clock, that one?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. On hot summer days in English villages and towns, there's nothing quite as refreshing as an ice-cold glass of dandelion and burdock, the soda drink brewed from humble weeds as summer passes by the yellow flowers, turn to fluffy white heads we affectionately call clocks. As children blow them to tell the time, each blow 1 hour of time. Some call them weeds. I call them both fun and delicious.
Great read, thank you. This is a really fun poem, Incubus. I've never heard of that, where they call them clocks and blow them to tell the time. That's a fascinating idea. I'm curious how the timing would go with that, or if it's not really about being accurate, if it's just kind of like, you know, if you've walked around and found another one and blown it and watched it fly away, it's probably about an hour. I think it's a beautiful, relaxed way of living. An ice-cold glass of dandelion and burdock. I don't know what burdock is, but interesting. And they would call it a soda drink brewed from humble weeds. My grandma used to have dandelion wine that was quite alcoholic. I'm curious if this drink had a little kick to it as well. But either way, it sounds like a nice, relaxing way with the parents drinking it and the kids having fun blowing on the flowers. I like that it's referencing them as humble weeds. You know, they're flowers that are providing drink and fun and beauty, but they're humble about it. Very nice. Pam, what did you think?
Now, this is a wonderful brevity. I love that he pays tribute to the dandelion. My parents, my dad and my stepmom, too, used to make dandelion wine. I also know the leaves of the dandelion can be quite nutritious. I haven't tried them, but I've read that they have a bitter taste and you're better off going with the younger ones, but they add a lot of nutrition. It's always fun because, you know, like in here, you know, we do the yellow dandelion rub on your chin, and if your chin turns yellow, you like butter, you know. And it's fun to see how different cultures, like, you know, with the Incubus being from Great Britain in England, and it's just fun to see, you know, that they call them clocks and the children blow on them to tell the time. I had never heard of that either. So, you know, I just think that's absolutely delightful, and it's fun to learn something new. So very well done.
And there's something about dandelions, maybe because they're so, you know, widespread where you can have more than enough of them. They do seem to be something that children gravitate to. I remember being young and our schoolyard was full of them, so we would make dandelion crowns and dandelion necklaces and, like, belts. You would braid them all together and just all the flowers attached. And I remember my one teacher getting very upset because she was allergic to the flowers, and all the girls came in just, like, wearing so many of them. So, oh, poor Mrs. Zott. But we just loved being covered in those flowers. And, you know, you'd get the pollen all over yourself. It was you know, quite the scene, but we thought it was very pretty.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and burdock is actually a plant in the daisy family that has an edible root. And you can actually, like, I Googled dandelion and burdock drink. You can find recipes for making that. Or you can even just buy it, like, already canned.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yep.
I might have to try it.
Sometimes some things that are made out of plants I do fine with, and some things cause me to just get, quickly stuffed up. Like I cannot have jasmine tea. I will instantly go to sinus problems and runny nose because of allergies. But I'd be willing to take a little sip and risk it and then,
Yeah, see how it goes from there.
Yeah, exactly.
That's wise. Take it carefully. With anything new, really. Robbie, what did you think of the poem?
Well, I was interested in all the new things I learned as well. I looked up the clock terminology, and it said the white seed head of a dandelion after flowering. And in this poem, what I found the beauty in was pointing out the utility of and the contribution that it gives in nature and to humanity. Because sometimes when we see something that we might normally regard as not so pretty or not so great in some way, we forget that maybe it does have some sort of utility. And in this case with the dandelion, the poem is talking about, what it is that it can do. It can produce a tea. And then I like the... when it's talking about affectionately called clocks, and there's all those little things that we build up around objects, and it doesn't necessarily have to be conventionally the most pretty objects. A lot of times, the beauty comes in kind of afterwards, like when you see the dandelion heads floating in the air. Like when they've detached from the main flower, and then you see the whole fluffy thing floating around in the wind. Like, to me, that looks very beautiful. And it's not like you don't see that beauty when it's rooted to the ground and it's attached and it's like part of the whole field, right? So I kind of got that from that. From the poem. And again, at the end, some call them weeds. I call them both fun and delicious. And so that's pointing out that the beauty of the dandelion with what it can give you in that utilitarian sort of way.
I like that. I'm really enjoying these dandelion poems. I mean, I know it's to my prompt, so I'm kind of biased because I'm like, yeah, this is what I wanted to hear. But everyone did it so well. So I'm loving all of the entries so far. Pam, would you read the poem by Cassia F., please?
I would be happy to. Only If You Wish by Cassia F. And it goes like this. White clouds as I stare at the sky, puffed cotton amongst the bluest of skies. It's springtime as I take a walk and admire the beauty. There's a certain scent my core can't seem to forget. As my steps become closer, this aroma grows stronger. I see it. Oh, I see it. Wide, bright green leaves supporting the most magnificent white bells. I kneel to see and smell forever. Lilies of the valley dance upon my flesh. With eyes closed, I hear the bells. I speak to them as I become one. I ask, you tiny white love with vibrations of angel perfume only heaven creates, why do you hide so deep into the widest of leaves? Because the one that wants to see me will find me. I smiled and knew that without the whitest of most exquisite bells, life would be empty. Beauty we want to find will show us the way. Only If You Try, and poem.
Great read, Pam. And beautiful poem, Cassia. I really like that kind of anticipation where as soon as there's the smell of the flower, they know what they're going to be finding. And the feeling of it, like physically, lilies of the valley dance upon my flesh. So it's engaging different senses. The smell, the feel, and then finally, well, even before, I was going to say the sight, but imagining that the bells are there, because they look like bells. I don't think you can actually hear them, but that, again, that's the anticipation of it being like the bells are ringing and you're about to find such beauty. And then I like that she's commenting on how, you know, it has the big leaves, so you have to really search for the flower itself. But if you really wish it to see them, if you are willing to seek out true beauty, then you will find it. I think that works really nicely as a metaphor too. It's like, yeah, there are pretty flowers on the surface, but if you look closer, if you take the time to really search and know what you're looking for, you can find something even more beautiful. I thought that was very touching. Robbie, what did you think?
When you had spoken of, you know, how you have to go out deeper and find the flower and to find what you're looking for, I think that often in life that's when you have the most reward and you find the most beauty is when it's not as apparent, when it's a little bit out of the way. And I know often in life I find the most satisfaction when I'm looking for something and it's something unique and I finally get it and I see it, and it, even more so, it's beautiful to me. I was just thinking about I learned about the Prussian blue pigment for painting, and it's such a beautiful color, and it's not too hard to find, but I mean, you do have to, like, you know, when you go to the paint store or whatever, you have to specifically ask for it, right? And I can think of a lot of other examples in life, just my own and just in general, where those kind of beautiful things, they are made even more beautiful because they are a little harder to find. It makes it even more rewarding when you come across it.
It's true. Yeah, I was seeing it as like kind of like a relationship thing of like, you know, not just seeking the first pretty person at the bar, but looking further. But I think it can work with all different aspects of life. Pam,
don't
what
even
you
get
think?
Me started on bars.
Yeah, I really like how this can work as a straightforward poem about, you know, the appreciation of a lily of the valley, but also works well as an extended metaphor for searching for that someone has the inner beauty, or even searching for any aspect of life where, you know, like you're not satisfied with what's on the surface but want to delve deeper. And I really like that there's that act of kneeling down, and that act of asking the question. And, you know, there's kind of a sense of reverence within those last couple of stanzas that I really appreciate. This is beautifully written and very well done.
I like that you use the word reverence. I can definitely see that there. Great comments, everybody. Now, this next poem is by S.M. Pierce. It's called Spring's First Blooms. Spring's first blooms, neon yellow bullet holes against budding greenery, fast friends with pollinators and grape hyacinth alike, just waiting for their chance to become something new. Now a great white tuft, a beacon of hope for brethren, honoring each gust of wind with seedlings scattered, hopeful and jovial, fluorescent and lush, spring's first blooms. Well, that was a beautiful poem, S.M. Pierce. I like that it's described as neon yellow bullet holes against budding greenery. That's such a fun way of putting it. And they are kind of like the bullet holes in the green if you're trying to have that perfect flat green look. Neon yellow bullet holes. Love it. But then to describe it as a beacon of hope is really great too. It's a hope for their brethren because it's a hope of keeping their species alive. That white tuft is so full of potential. I like that it says honoring each gust of wind with seedlings scattered. You know, it's not just each gust of wind scatters seeds. It's honoring the gust of wind, taking that gust and making something come of it. I think that's a beautiful way to say it. And then again, like it was at the beginning, it was neon. It's fluorescent at the end because they are very bright flowers. And the emphasis on first, spring's first bloom, I don't know if they're always first exactly, but they are one of the earlier ones that you notice. Once the dandelions start coming, you know that the rest of the flowers in the garden are starting to get there. So it is one of that first signs of spring. And in that way, it's also a beacon of hope. This is really well done. Thank you. Pam, what were your thoughts?
This is a beautiful brevity paying tribute to the dandelion. I too like the reference of neon yellow bullet holes. I also like the line "fast friends with pollinators," and there we have again a poem that reminds us that the importance of the dandelion to the bees and to other pollinating insects. You know, and a beacon of hope for brethren honoring each gust of wind. Hopeful and jovial. You know, I like that to me that the main focus of this is hope. And, you know, the hope of, as you mentioned, Faziana, the dandelion survival, but also a representation of the hope of humanity. It just makes for, to me, a wonderful metaphor in the idea that we can become something new. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
I like that we can become something new. There is something so hopeful about them, about that transformation where, to me, they become even more beautiful once they're dead. You know, the yellow form is really when they're alive, and that white poof is what I actually like the best. So it's like there's that next stage that is still worthy, even when they think that it's done. It's absolutely beautiful. Robbie, what did you think?
Well, I enjoyed how uniquely energetic they were in this example. Sometimes plants aren't necessarily described in the most energetic or kind of kinetic terms, but in this case, they definitely are. And we forget. I like the neon yellow bullet holes as well. And we sometimes forget, because they're static things, just how alive the plants actually are. And the fact, a lot of times, that they are alive. I think I've mentioned on the show here before, but there's a concept that the scientists have come up with recently called the forest wide web. And they named it that because when they really looked at the forest, they saw that there's so much going on in terms of chemical signals and all kinds of things being transmitted biologically, by biological mechanisms in the forest. And that, and it's such a comprehensive network of that they likened it to the World Wide Web. And so I enjoyed this poem for reminding me that there is a lot of things going on with plants and how they can still be like energetic sort of things, you know, with them twirling about in the wind and all of that. So, yeah, I enjoyed it for that. And I'm just going to be getting off now, but I enjoyed, as always, calling in and reading and commenting. And I particularly enjoyed this, too. This dandelion challenge was, it's very lively. It's the poems are very, the words I was just using are energetic and lively, and there's, you just kind of, it bring all the poems are like bringing forth a lot of colors to the mind, so it's been a nice challenge that way. So on that note, I'll just be off, but I'll still be listening through the online and just hanging around the chat for a few more minutes.
All right. Well, thank you so much for calling in. I really appreciate it, and it was great to hear your comments.
You bet. Yep. Thanks. Have a good night.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Pam, would you read the next poem for me, please, by L.O. Reeves?
I would be happy to. Just tell me one thing. Is that title pronounced vacuous?
I think so.
Okay, well, we'll go with that. All right. Vacuous by L.O. Reeves, and it goes like this. Sometimes I never see a rain cloud for weeks, and typically that's great. But when your leaves dry out and you're left more confused than you were with incessant showers, and you no longer bear fruit nor blossoms, you think maybe rainstorms weren't so bad after all. But I suppose a cactus was made for this life of empty sunshine, a deep yearning for life when you drowned in the rain. End poem.
Great read, Pam. This is wonderful. I like that it plays on the other side of rain. And maybe like rain as a metaphor too, but like I love the rain, and I know with all the forest fires and drama in my area, things get too dry. It's definitely a problem where we need that rain. And as much as people love the sun, it's so important. And I think that could also represent kind of maybe the, I don't want to say drama, but like, you know, things that are underestimated or misunderstood in life where it may seem like there's too much happening. I just want it to be like a smooth day. And then when every day is just kind of bland because it's all the same, then it ends up kind of losing its excitement. This is tagged as about being sad and pain and depression, and there can be this emptiness that happens in depression where it's worse than feeling sad, because the rain cloud might be that hit of emotions, that being really upset. But when the rain clouds stop and there isn't any big emotions, then, like it says, you're left more confused than you were with incessant showers. You no longer bear fruit nor blossoms. When you're not having any feelings, then you're not creating, you're not doing great things as well as you're not doing the bad things. So it's that in-between that you can feel completely lost, a life of empty sunshine and a deep yearning for life when you drowned in the rain, because at least when you were sad, you were feeling. This is very sad, and also of just a really well put together metaphor. Pam, how did you interpret it?
Well, I have to agree with you. This is a wonderful extended metaphor. And I like how you touched on the idea of, how sometimes with depression, there's that lack of feeling. You don't feel anything. You feel numb. And so you almost wish for that sadness, that crying to come back. I also thought that there's kind of this message of how the difficult times in our lives help us to bear the fruit. Like if we don't have those challenges that we meet, sometimes life just becomes mundane and we don't grow as a person. We don't blossom as a person. So, I really thought this was just an amazing write, very well put together and beautifully written.
Yes, and a cactus is a different choice than anyone else in the contest. So I like that. I encourage people to flower that they connected with. It didn't have to be the dandelion, although a lot of people did go that way. And I think that the cactus worked really well in this case. Now, this is by Grant G., and it's called Dandy. She's mastered the art of surviving from birth to death in her continuous repeated cycles. Seed lands, sun shines, root takes hold, stalk grows, petals form, temperature drops, flower withers, soft breeze, wish floats, bees buzz, birds sing, men and women love, streams roll, rivers flow, snow falls, ice melts, flowers spring, berries grow, salmon leap, grizzly roars, yellow petals take over every space in meadows, dandelions galore, an artist sits there smiling, for now at least she knows her grit and determination is that of the greatest survivor nature's ever sown. End poem. Pam, would you start the comments, please?
Oh, absolutely. Wonderful read there. It truly has been a night of delightful and thought-provoking and wonderful imagery that takes us in different directions. To me, what really ties this poem together nicely, and the whole thing is wonderful, but is that she brings in the artist, the sitting there smiling, for now at least she knows her grit and determination is that of the greatest survivor nature has known. I like this beautiful idea of the dandelion as a survivor, as something of strength, and as a representation of someone who is strong. I really like the lines, bees buzz, birds sing, men and women love, streams roll, rivers flow. There's a wonderful sense of movement and the idea of the continuation of life. So beautifully written and very well done.
I agree. And I can picture this as a picture book where, not necessarily a children's picture book, but just a book with images. Because it has such, strong images to it. The idea of the different seasons and animals. And I can sort of imagine this artist sitting there, and then as the seasons change, the insects and the plants and the animals around her change. I shouldn't say her. Actually, I think it's a man who wrote this. But it says she knows. Okay, so the artist is a woman. So she is there, everything changes around her, and she realizes that she's like the dandelion because she has been the consistent thing throughout all of this. As everything else kind of went in and out, the dandelion was everywhere. And survived, and she was like the dandelion. It's powerful, and I can see that smile. I can imagine this artist. I thought that was beautiful. And even as it describes the flower withers, the wish floats. And that wish is something that a lot of people have touched on in their poems, because it's kind of that magical thing that is associated with dandelions, that you make a wish when you see one fall apart or when you blow on it. And even as it withers, it's floating hope. I just love that. Well done, Grant. And let me see what we have next. So now we are going to do the carryover from Babbler's Contest, which was
co-host just called in.
Oh, there she is. Thank you.
Yep.
Hi.
Hi, Babbler.
Hi. Hey, Babbler.
Hi. You made it.
I did. I'm sorry. I'm so late. I was just like, oh, my God, I'm not moving. I'm just stuck. But I'm finally back. So
Yay. That
was terrible.
Sorry. Well, thankfully, Pam and Robbie called in. So I only had to talk to myself for a very short time. And I even, like, literally talked to myself because I was trying to say someone else's name and I said my own. I was like, and there's Fabiana. Wait a minute. Robbie's like, that's you.
Yeah. Well, I'm great. Well, thank you so much, Pam and Robbie. I'm so sorry, guys. Anyway, yeah, I like just got back. So I'm like, oh my God. Okay.
Well, despite the rush, I'm glad that we get to hear you. We basically just finished all of the poems from my dandelion contest. So what we're going to do now is do the one carryover from your coping contest. And then I think I'm going to dig into some of the ones from your next week contest, because we've sped through without you.
Oh, okay.
That's a beautiful comment. So basically, I'm going to put this up by Bobby, Captain B2. I always want to say B12 because I have to take B12 shots. So as soon as I see B, I say B12. Captain B2, Bobby, for your coping contest, did this audio. And let me just find the audio. Here we go.
The uniformed dilettante, followers of time-honored tradition, from father to daughter it was passed, to serve with distinction their commission, their pride in the corps was steadfast. Ever equipped to enter a conflict, constant training would always prepare, to carry out any mission to interdict, she ready to go anytime, anywhere. Exercises and war games the cannon, the edge on her skills never dull, uneventful years, they just ran on, entire career in a 20-year lull. Retired with accolade and kudo, far from conflict and safe from all harms, came to feel that the career was just pseudo, no experience with brandishing arms. Never was bloodied in battle, no rounds flying over her head, no charging into the fray to the saber's rattle, to right, no right to sleep among honored dead. The uniforms now hang in the closet, the sea stories all that remain, no deployments or conflicts to posit, just a peacetime Marine as her claim. End poem. Author's note, I was an active duty Marine for 20 years, from 72 to 92, daughter of a United States Marine who served for 4 years in the 1st Marine Division during World War II, wounded and survived the Battle of Peleliu in the Pacific. My entire career was during the longest period of peace our nation has ever had. I look at what today's Marines have been and are experiencing in the service of their country, and it makes me feel like a dilettante. Sea stories are anecdotes from someone's military career. Old joke, what's the difference between a fairy tale and a sea story? Well, sea story and a fairy tale begins once upon a time and ends with, and they live happily ever after. And the sea story begins with, this is no bullshit, and ends with, it's been screwed up ever since. End author's note.
The author's note was a really nice touch on this piece. I really liked this piece. I mean, it's difficult, you know, it's weird because, like, you want there to be peace. You know what I mean? Like, nobody really wants to go to war. But at the same time, to, like, serve your whole career in the military and not have seen that and then have the generation before you and after you deal with that, I could imagine the imposter syndrome that would accompany that, you know, like feeling like almost fraudulent from your experience because you didn't experience that, if that makes sense. And I feel like that this poem explains that very well, you know. Was never bloodied in battle, no rounds flying over her head, no charging into the fray to sabers rattle, no right to sleep among honored dead. You know, like not deserving the kudos and accolades because not feeling like you really did anything. You know, not that you didn't. It just happened to be a peaceful time. You know, like you're always at the ready, always prepared, which is kind of its own struggle anyway. You know, it's both fortunate, and yet I can see, you know, the struggle in it, which I really appreciated. I also appreciated the author's notes, you know, in kind of lightening it a little bit, you know, although I appreciate the somber tone to the piece and the kind of that internal struggle, you know. You hear a lot about military personnel who did fight in battles and have to deal with coping with that, you know, the gore and the violence and all of it. And the struggle of peacetime isn't something that is talked about a lot, but I think this poem makes it really relatable and accessible. So I appreciated this write from Captain B2. Thank you. I'm not sure who all we have on the line. So what do you think, Faisiana?
Are you on mute, Faisiana?
I was. Thank you, Pam. I'm just talking away. I really enjoy this. I read it about a year ago, I think, or 6 months ago, I guess, because that's how old it is. And I loved it at the time, and I'm happy to hear it again. I really love the stanza, retired with accolade and kudo, far from conflict and safe from all harm, came to feel that the career was just pseudo, no experience with brandishing arms. You know, there's a lot of depth in that section, but, I mean, it flows really nice. It has some great rhymes with words that you don't normally have rhyming together, like kudo and pseudo. I think that there's no shame in being part of or maintaining peace. You know, I'm happy that she retired safely, and I think that she's really great, and that this is an introspective piece about, like, the challenges of not having the experience that you expect to have when you're going to be joining something like the military. But she, you know, she had an important role, even if she sometimes doubts that. So, thank you so much for sharing, Captain B2. And Balor, we only have us and Pam right now. There's nobody else on the line.
Okay. Thanks, Pam. Pam, what are your thoughts?
I really liked this. It is a poem I've heard before, and it's worth hearing again. There's a raw honesty to this, a sense of emotion. And I can understand how she feels, especially, you know, if you're from a family, like her father served in the Marines, and you know, I too am very thankful that she came out of her career safe, and I think there is a real honor to serving in the Marines, even if you didn't go to war. But you know, I do understand how she feels and how, you know, it must have been like how she must have imagined her career would be, especially when comparing it to her father's military career. And the joke in the AN definitely made me laugh. So that was just an excellent write and very well done.
Yeah, agreed. I do think that, you know, ideally all people have the military career that she had, you know, ready to go and protecting the country by being there. You know, if we had no military, we could get attacked at any minute, because why not? There's no military, you know, but ideally we're not in a state of war. But, you know, while it doesn't seem like it, maybe sometimes I think that this is the ideal scenario. Anyway, great comments, Pam. Thank you. All right, so that was the one carryover, Feziana. So now we're into the new contest.
Yes, can you please explain the scars contest?
Yeah. So the next the upcoming contest that I had going was titled Scars, and it was just you know, it's about just, you know, how everyone has gone through something and has been left with scars from their experiences. I did supply some quotes to kind of, you know, help fuel that creative engine a little bit. So the quotes that I had supplied, the first one is, we are so much more than our scars. You know, and then the second one was, she dipped her wings in ink to cover up her scars and wrote her story in the sky. Her words lit up like stars, from Christy Ann Martin. And then the next quote was, the scars you can't see are the hardest to heal. And then the fourth quote was, the marks humans leave are most often scars. But the idea was just the kind of prompt at the idea of scars, the marks left over from painful experiences, whether physical or emotional. That was the prompt.
Excellent. So I think these are going to be some really deep and dark poems, and I'm looking forward to hearing them. We'll only have time for a couple of them today, and it's just a sampling of what you can look forward to next week. I won't be here next week because I'm going to be on vacation, but Babbler will be here, and Victoria will be here, and if they're lucky, then Pam will be here as well, because Pam is awesome. And anyway, it's going to be a great show. So this is Scarred Heart by Darkened Auras. The gash across my knee, in time, that wound will heal. And while it may leave a scar, the pain I will no longer feel. The chicken pox I had, they too may have left scars, but all they are now to me is a memory of what they are. The scars left upon my heart, the ones you cannot see, they may be bandaged, but fully healed, they'll never be. End poem.
Great read, Feziana. I like, you know, kind of talks about that physical wounding, you know, the gash across my knee. The time that wound will heal, you know, but those don't really, while they may leave physical permanent scars, they don't leave permanent emotional scars. Like, you don't usually think about like the little scars and scabs and marks that you got as a kid, or, you know, because there's nothing really emotional about them. You know, falling on a pavement isn't necessarily like traumatic, but it may leave scars, you know, and the same with chicken pox, you know, it's the same kind of thing. It's not so much anymore, thankfully, you know, with vaccines and all of that. But, you know, at least when I was a kid, everyone got the chicken pox. I was told you only get TikTok once, but I had it 3 times, so that's not exactly accurate. But, you know, I don't look at my chickenpox scars as, like, emotionally damaging. But the scars left upon my heart, the ones you cannot see, they may be bandaged, but fully healed, they'll never be. You know, those are the deeper wounds. I think it's simple, you know, it's just brevity of little 3 stanzas, but I think it touches upon, like, the crux of the theme of the night. I think it was really well written. So thank you, Dark and Doris. Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, this is a wonderful brevity with great rhyme and flow. I can definitely relate to that chicken pox thing. I was back in the time, too, when the parents and grandparents purposely put the friends and the cousins together in hopes that you would get it and get it over with. And, man, that was just some horrible stuff. But, yeah, I mean, the thing with those small scars, like, you know, the gash on the knee and the chicken pox and the physical, they're never back to what they were before. They don't remain a gash. They don't remain a sore. But that wound, those wounds of the heart, you know, you can cover them up. You can act like they don't exist. But they're always there. If not, like, right up front, they're there in the background, never fully healed. So beautifully written and very well done.
Yeah, agreed. And I agree, the rhyme and flow on this is beautiful. Thank you, Pam. Wonderful comments. Susanna, what did you think?
Well, I agree with what both of you have said. You know, it has a gentle flow to it, and it has some nice rhymes, and it does get to, you know, the heart of that quote. It reminds you that, you know, the physical scars that are apparent are not always the ones that really impacted you. The emotional ones are. And heck, even physically, like, the scars in my brain affect me way more than the scars on my leg. But if you see the scars on my leg, you're like, oh, well, maybe you should sit down, or, like, you know, like, because people who see, like, my physical problems of, like, when I had my broken leg, that's always the concern. It's like, that's not the thing that's bad. And I feel like emotional stuff even more so, because it's underestimated. People don't get to see the impact on it, and invisible pain that you feel like you have to hide, or even if you can show it, but, like, the people don't really acknowledge it, that part can be so much worse. And you know, heartbreak is something that may fade a little bit, but it's always there. There's always things that will remind you of that pain. So I think this is a very true and well done poem.
Great comments, Casey. It is funny, like, it makes me think of, like, all the times people have, like, unseen mental illnesses, you know, when people are like, you know, you aren't sick, you don't have a problem, because it's not something physical that you can see, and just how inaccurate that is. I like how your comments kind of touch upon that idea. Excellent comments. Where are we off to now?
I'm trying to post it, but it's being very slow. Here we go. So this is a poem by Randy G. And I think it's your turn to read, Bevler.
Yeah, I haven't read, so I'm sure it probably is.
It's your turn, by far.
All right, this is Pain by Randy G. For most, life delivers broken hearts and dreams, the results of people's ill-advised, sketchy schemes, or maybe the lingering residue of misguided hope, creating wounds, putting us at the end of our rope. Some may leave no outwardly visible scar tissue, causing others to question, hey, what's their issue? Great job, house, beautiful family, massive charm. So why the gloomy disposition? Where's the harm? Then there's war, which produces all sorts of pain, loss of limbs or sight. There are no John Waynes, lucky vets returned home to wives or mothers, but sadly can only relate to their veteran brothers. The physically wounded get some types of care, and those with inner hurt are left in their despair. The pain is the same, whatever caused the scars, inward, outward, and irrespective of who you are. End quote. I liked this piece because it kind of, to me, it equalizes the trauma. You know, it's not even so much that, like, the physical scars are lesser, it's that they're different. And I appreciate that concept, you know. Some may leave no outwardly visible scar tissue, causing others to question, hey, what's their issue? You know, again, touching upon the idea that, like, mental harm and emotional damage is often, like, overlooked. But that, I did really like that later, you know, they talk about physically wounded get some types of care. You know, like, there's some help out there for them, but they're still damaged. You know, the pain is the same, whatever caused the scars, inward, outward, and irrespective of who you are. I really, I don't know, I appreciate that it equalizes. You know, it doesn't diminish or make different kinds of pain less than, which I appreciate. You know, whereas the previous poem, you know, it's like a scar on your knee, or chicken pox, there's not really that emotional baggage that goes with that because they're kind of like incidental scars. Whereas like war wounds or, you know, say someone like stabbed or attacked you, you know, those will have the mental scars that correlate. You know, there is trauma associated with that. That's not just physical, although you can see the physical. You know, it doesn't even have to be like a physically violent thing, like someone attacking you. It could be like a car accident, you know, that just kind of wrecks your life. You know, there's still a lot of emotional baggage that can come with that. So I really appreciate how this piece equalizes. It has a nice flow and it has a nice rhyme scheme that goes with it as well. But I think it has some really good points in here. So I thought this was a wonderful write from Randy G. Fabiana, what did you think?
I completely agree. I love that it equalizes the physical and emotional pain. I like that it has lucky, in quotation marks, like lucky vets who are maybe not so lucky to return home in one piece, but they're not really because they can only relate to their veteran brothers. They now have a hard time connecting to their wives or mothers. You know, they're considered the lucky ones. I like that it talks about how the physically wounded get some type of care and those with inner hurt are left in their despair. I think that's often the case because people don't always recognize that they need help or know how to help them. You know, if someone's in a wheelchair, then you know you have to build that ramp. You have to make things accessible again. But when someone is emotionally hurt, not everyone knows how to respond to that, how to make things accessible, how to adapt to let them, you know, be nurtured again and be a part of things. That's really hard. And I think that's true of more things, too, not just war, but, say, like, abusive relationships. You know, someone shows up with a black eye and you immediately, you know, try to rescue them. Someone who is emotionally abused might not get the help that they need because people don't recognize it. I think that is something that's really important to recognize. And I think that this poem does a beautiful job of showing respect for all kinds of pain.
Yeah, well said. I really like your closing line there, you know, having respect for all kinds of pain. They come in so many different forms, and I totally agree. You know, some are harder to treat because they aren't visible, but that doesn't make one more or less than. Excellent comments, Viviana.
Yeah, this is a beautiful, heartfelt write. It's beautiful in its sadness and its truth. You know, all the way through, it reminds us of how how much the emotional scars affect people, how sometimes there aren't heroes rushing in. I like that he puts lucky in quotation marks in reference to those veterans that have those inner scars, and, you know, they come home to wives or mothers, but sadly can only relate to their veteran brothers. I also liked the part where it said, some may leave no outwardly visible scar tissue, causing others to question, hey, what's their issue? I felt like that was a really important and strong part, because so many times there's those invisible illnesses, those pains, those scars on the inside that people will doubt. They won't, you know, they doubt even when you say it. You know, even when you say this is what's wrong, it's oftentimes the idea of, oh, that's all in your head. You're making it up. And so just really a powerful write and very well done.
You know, what you say is so important too, because so often with mental illness, that is the stigma, right? Like, that's the fear, that you share something really personal about yourself that's difficult to share. You know, like, I have this mental illness, I have this thing that I struggle with, and the idea that people just don't believe you, you know, or think lesser of you for it, you know, is part of what makes it so hard. So I thought that was a really great point, Pam. Thank you. What's up next, Ephesiana?
So our last poem for tonight will be Tragedy Behind the Mask of Triumph by Daniel Descino. And Pam, would you give that a read for us?
Absolutely. Tragedy Behind the Mask of Triumph by Daniel Descino. I devour love, emotion, and want as a ravenous polar bear on the first spring morning. But there are no seasons for me. It's just a continuous battering of dark, overlit days and star-illuminated quiet nights. The hunger never ends. For such a need, there is survival, you might even say, to replenish the blood that flows as an open sewer drain, sliced open by my daily suicide. Each day a chance to live in the world. That is what really is. And each day a clean cut to the jugular, stab wound to the heart, a slit of my wrist so devastating, I lose the hand complete, and its will that kills me daily. And I die into the illusionary world that I have created to hide from the one of which I so severely do not belong, do not fit, do not seem to have a place in. I can't decide which I think it's all of them. And beyond the bandages and tourniquets of skin, hair, and bones, beyond the plastic surgery of fashion and exercise, I am nothing but the internal self-afflicted scars that send all childhood memories off into oblivion as a family photo album sold at a yard sale. Don't look at my eyes. They show adoration. They can't help it. Don't look at my smile. It's been programmed when to react. Don't listen to my words. They try to protect bleeding so the wounds can heal to bleed again. Step back. Look as one if you must. The painting titled Tragedy Behind the Mask of Triumph will focus. End poem.
Excellent read, Pam. This is a really kind of cutting poem, you know, just the idea, you know, of being through so much pain that it feels like daily suicide is really, really painful, you know. The stanza, each day a chance to live in the world that is what really is, and each day a clean cut to the jugular. You know, it's kind of a stanza and a half, but like the idea that every day to start anew and be hopeful that things will be better, to be cut down by the fact that they're not, you know, speaks of like such resilience and yet so much pain at the same time. you know, and then at the end there, you know, the don't look at my eyes, they show adoration, they can't help it. You know, to put on the brave face, like to feign normalcy when this is what's going on behind the mask, you know, the constant daily disappointment, the constant pain, to the point where it almost feels like you're killing yourself just to exist. I think it's really kind of a strong and potent message in this piece, you know, and to ask the reader and in some ways like the people around you to step back and, you know, like stop buying the facade almost, you know, and see that there's tragedy behind the mask of triumph, which I like as a statement anyway, because in order to be a mask of triumph, in order to triumph over anything, there has to be that struggle. There has to be the battle. Otherwise, it's not a triumph. It's just existing. You know, it's part and parcel, I think, is the word. You know, so I really enjoyed this piece. I thought it was really strong and very cutting. The words are very, they're precise. So I enjoyed this piece very much from Daniel. Pam, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I like that you call this precise. I have to agree. There was really nice, not nice, but very visceral, strong imagery. I like that he went with the metaphor of being a polar bear, because, you know, the interesting thing about the polar bear is the only bear that will purposely hunt humans for food. So that right there to me represents the idea of self-destruction. I also like how there's this idea of you know, feeling unhappy with yourself on the inside. So getting that plastic surgery, that trained smile, putting on that mask that shows everybody you're all right, even though on the inside you're not. So just an amazing write and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. I love that you referred to it as plastic surgery. You know, the brave face is like a plastic surgery. I like that as an idea. Thank you. Feziana, what did you think?
I think this is really well done. This is, you know, very dark and deep and definitely the darkest thing that I've read from Daniel. It's, you know, full of great analogies, like the ravenous polar bear that's just, like, devouring any positive emotions that it can. When it talks about not having any seasons, that really hit me. There are no seasons for me. It's just continuous battering. So, like, there's no reprieve. Because the change of seasons tends to be like, it's not unbearably hot anymore. You know, we have fresh air of the cool breeze, or it's not cold anymore. We're starting to feel warmth. Like, there's in the transitions, even though it can make things seem extreme compared to each other, we do get to kind of have some release from whatever is uncomfortable. So to not have seasons, to always be stuck in that same, like, stage or state of being, just seems horrible to me. It's being locked in that rut. The idea that the outwardly fitting in, the eyes showing adoration, the smile that's been programmed when to react, that just feeling of falsehood where you're actually just breaking apart inside, the sadness of the family photo album sold at a yard sale, of, you know, just being cast aside and not having those memories cherished. This is like tears in my eyes, kind of just heartbreaking. And even though it doesn't talk about a specific tragedy that made this pain, you can feel so much pain behind it. So that's a powerful poem, to be able to do that without telling us the tragedy to make us feel it. And we are out of time. Blog Talk is telling me I have 10 seconds. So thank you so much to Robbie and Pam for calling in, to Babbler for making it after your crazy day, to everyone who submitted to all three of the contests, and I hope that everyone has a great week. Sorry I won't be there next week to hear the rest of these from this amazing contest. Well, I mean, I'll listen to the recording later on. So, Babbler, have a wonderful week, and have fun without me.
Yeah, and have a wonderful vacation.
Thank you.
And thank you to Pam and Robbie as well for calling in.
My heroes.
All right. Mine too. All right.
Have a good night.
Good night, everyone.